And yet, I also feel an infinite freedom. I don't care. I am here. This is my dream. This is my imaginal space.
In our dreams, we fly. Objects slip through our hands as we struggle to grasp and make sense of the nonsensical. At times, we're chased by wild beasts or fall into the abyss. Does it mean anything? What can it tell us about our waking life? This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Our guests today study and work with dreams, and we're going to ask them how we can get more out of ours. I'm joined by dream researcher and creator of the Sleep Dream Database, Kelly Bulkley. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And City University of New York Assistant Professor Elisa Minyukova. Thanks for being here, Elisa.
Thank you so much.
The audio you heard at the start of this conversation is courtesy of the Dream Mapping Project. Kelly, why do we dream? Do dreams have a function?
Well, yeah, I think your previous guest set us up very nicely, because the idea of mind wandering applies to sleep as well. And that dreaming, one way of thinking of dreaming is that it is the brain, the mind, freed from the constraints of the waking world, and able to wander, and my view, to play. So ultimately, I see dreaming as a kind of play of the imagination during sleep.
How do our dreams affect our health and human flourishing, Kelly?
Yeah, well, much like the functions of play, dreams help keep our minds flexible and alert. I think they help us stay vigilant and aware of possible dangers as well as possible opportunities. They help connect our memories of the past and hopes for the future, process new experiences. They do all sorts of things. Dreams are actually, I'm not sure if there's even one function. I think like waking consciousness, there's not just one function for that either. So,
yeah. Elisa, have dreams helped you to process your waking life and helped you work out problems when you're creating art?
They've led a big part of my life in general, of sleeping and waking, it seems. I often feel like they're really actually at the wheel, and then I intuit where they're directing me within my art and just in general in my spiritual life as well. Multifunctional.
When you say they're at the wheel, Elisa, you must really pay close attention to your dreams. Do you journal them? How do you keep track of them?
I draw them, actually. And I think this was, I journal as well, but I spend a lot of time, because they're very illustrative sometimes and animated, and they're easy for me to draw often. So they're almost like storyboards. And so I have a journal that's a combination of drawings and prose, I would say.
We're talking about the science of dreams and how they can affect our waking lives. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We got an email from Joseph. Joseph writes, could your guests mention any comments or insight into the amazing science surrounding lucid dreams? I have practiced it off and on for 40 years and have studied it extensively. I would love to hear your take. Kelly, talk to us about lucid dreams. First, tell us what they are and what you know about them.
Yeah. This is something that humans have been experimenting with for millennia, actually. The development of some form of awareness or consciousness within the sleep and dream state. So being aware that you are dreaming, and sometimes having an ability to influence or control what's happening within the dream space. This is something that in Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism, ancient Asian spiritual traditions, they consider this meditating in sleep. So cultivating consciousness in sleep was a standard meditative practice and goal. In our culture, I'm a bit of a critic on this. I worry that our kind of hustle culture of what can we control, what can we sort of extract from things, that kind of ideology gets blended into the excitement around lucid dreaming. And so my advice usually is, if that's a part of your dream life, that's wonderful and it can be very powerful. make sure that it's not sort of an extended ego trip, just if you can, and just make sure there's remains an openness to the playful spontaneity that comes from non-lucid dreaming, let's say, just dream, the deeper dream imagination. So
it sounds like you're saying there's value in not being in the driver's seat when you're dreaming and not being able to control what happens.
Yeah, and then Elisa might have more to say about that, because that's a perspective more along the lines of Carl Jung and the idea that it's precisely the wisdom of the unconscious that we encounter in dreaming. And so we have to be careful about how much the ego gets involved in that. I don't know, Lisa, would you agree with that?
Yes, I completely agree. It's what I said at the beginning the dreams have been at the wheel in many times. I don't personally want to be at the control panel of the dreaming imagination. I would like whatever force is behind that to lead me rather than me trying to lead the force. So I do that enough in waking life. So this is for me almost a kind of a pet peeve when I hear the word, but I do understand that for many people it is extremely fascinating, and it probably depends on the kind of person and what they're interested in. But I would say if you can alternate, that would be also, I think, very healing and helpful to let the dreams sort of lead the path often.
Well, Kelly, considering what you've said about, you know, that playfulness that's so important with dreams, do you think dreams can help us regulate emotions? Do they serve as sort of an overnight therapy, or, as our previous guests were talking about, a way to kind of consolidate memories, sort them, make sense of what we've experienced?
Yeah, yes, I do. And it's helpful, I think, to expand on this idea of dreaming as play, to note that in the animal kingdom, various kinds of play, one of the most prominent is play fighting, where animals of different kinds, usually the younger members, the children of each species, test out sort of predator-prey activities, and which can involve negative emotions, fear, anger, and such. And so our dreams are playing sometimes with the negative experiences we have in life, as well as the positive experiences. But sometimes people are their attention is drawn to their bad dreams, their nightmares. Like, what's going on? Is there something wrong? And I'd say in those cases, there is a kind of emotional regulation happening, that the dreaming mind is trying to process some experience, some concern. And yes, the emotions can be negative, but within the dream space, it's a safe space, relatively speaking. And over time, that's how growth and healing occurs.
Well, in those nightmares, it sounds like would be a space where people would be tempted to really wish they could take the reins and make sure they don't get eaten by the bear or you know, engulfed in flames or whatever terrible thing is happening in their nightmares. Is that where you find people become most interested in this idea of lucid dreaming and being in that driver's seat?
Yeah. No, your instincts are exactly right. There's actually very effective psychotherapies that can help people with chronic nightmares or very intense nightmares that are sort of above and beyond sort of deeper insight kinds of dreams. That lucid dreaming practices can be helpful in those conditions.
Kelly, you've been quoted as saying that dreams explore the slippage between our public identities and our personal selves. Does this relate in particular to our work lives, what people who work with us every day see and experience?
Yeah. Well, it's a natural thing in human life because we're social beings. We interact with people all the time, but we also have our own individual selves. And if those get out of sync too much, that can be problematic. And so, yeah, it sometimes in a workplace where only a very narrow section of one's individuality can be expressed, that can generate tensions with all the other parts of oneself. The dreams will not necessarily say is, you know, a big danger, but will help with your awareness and just sensitivity of like, where might this become a problem? Where might this become an unhealthy gap between who I feel I am and what I'm being asked to do in a work situation?
Megan emails, I hardly ever remember details of my dreams. Do your guests have any recommendations on how to remember your dreams? once awake. Kelly, I want to get your take on this, but Elisa, first I want to ask you, because you must be really good at this. If you're creating art and you've got this journal and you're drawing these pictures, what's your secret to success with this?
I would say it's an ebb and flow, because I mean, life can get very Newtonian, as my friend says, you know, like, so you're really engaged in the outside world and there's just simply not enough time to really focus on the dreams. But if it's the kind of big memorable dream, which I get on occasion, which usually is like a tugboat for a series of other dreams that comes after it. So I can't say that it's something I practice every single night and I'm, you know, kind of like a dictator about it to myself. But I do, when I feel like there's a wave of something psycho-spiritual coming at me, that it's like a tectonic plate, I would say, of the unconscious has shifted. It'll bring with it a lot of, it seems, information that needs to be interpreted. And there I'm very careful about writing and drawing and noting even the smallest nuances of the dream. And I think that that's where my sort of manifesto comes in about interpretation at the moment, which I'm studying. Like, what exactly is it and how can we learn to work with it? Because that's something that's really important in art and dreams, the ability to interpret rather than, you know, be literal about the information you're receiving.
Kelly, do you have some tips for Megan? I mean, Elisa there just referenced kind of taking the time to think after the dream. If you've got that time, you know, drawing pictures, writing down, how are there practices that people can, you know, adopt in their own lives to try to get more intentional about remembering their dreams?
Yeah, yeah. No, there's actually a long human history of these kinds of practices. We refer to them as dream incubation rituals. And in virtually every culture going back millennia, people have had this idea, what could I do to sort of remember more dreams? And so often it's a matter of just simple intentionality. And modern research has borne this out, just simply going to bed at night thinking, I'd like to remember a dream tomorrow morning, increases the chances. It's not an automatic thing. Like, you know, I agree with pretty much everything Elisa said there. You can't be a dictator. You can't force it. But you can put out the welcome mat and you can have, let's say, a pad of paper and a pen by your side. You know, keeping a dream journal certainly helps encourage recall, because it's just signaling to the unconscious mind that, you know, the conscious mind is ready for anything that comes. Yeah.
Kelly, you have a sleep dream database. Tell us about that and you know, how that relates to remembering our dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is a project I began with many helpers in 2009. It's an online open access archive of dream reports and other information relating to sleep and dreams. There's about 40,000 dream reports now, with maybe another 10,000 in the queue waiting to be uploaded. There's a long queue, so we're taking our time. It's a curated collection, so it's not just dreams from anywhere. It's they're from research studies, dream journals that people have kept that I've interviewed, historical sources, and the database also has several tools for exploring and studying the dream. So, and now I've been working with a technology team that is creating an app called Elsewhere that's for kind of the public-facing dream journaling side of it, that has all sorts of AI bells and whistles that are really kind of amazing. And so this is, you know, I'm in a way, this is fulfilling ancient desires to discern the deeper patterns in dreams. Humans have known this for a long time, you know, dream interpretation manuals from thousands of years ago. They knew it. They knew there was something deeper there. And we just have the tools now to really get into it. So,
what have you really learned about dreams from this database? Have you come away with new ideas or new conclusions about dreams?
Well, yes. And this is, you know, something that I've been working with a lot with Elisa is, in addition to psychological personal meanings, dreams also reflect dimensions of our collective lives, the things happening in our communities, in the world, socially, politically, environmentally. And so we're finding different traces of evidence of how those kinds of influences on our waking lives also factor into our dreams.
Alisa, you, along with Kelly and a collective of artists, have a dream mapping project. And as I understand, the work's a bridge between dream science and the creative process. How, talk about how they're connected, dream science and the creative process.
I think when I originally made this kind of blurb about dream science, it was more to say that we were interested in the fact of dreaming. At least I was interested in the fact of dreaming, as opposed to maybe the idea of dreaming, because I was taking sort of an anthropological approach. So it would be watching groups of people talking about their dreams and where they could go from the conversation about dreaming, rather than abstractly sort of a new age approach to dreaming, that it automatically means this or that for the general population, right? So I want to say that this particular quote of dream science to me meant, I would say, the anthropology of dreaming would be a better way of phrasing that at this point, knowing where our project is headed.
I see. And how have you used your dreams in your art, Alisa? It sounds like they're a very important influence.
Well, at this point, we're now working a lot with film. So my art form has changed with this project a lot. I was a sculptor and I teach drawing. This is actually what I do at the college. But I've shifted to film, which I actually also studied. And it seems to be the best medium for this anthropological approach of watching people, I guess, collaborating on the storytelling of dreams, because that it seems to me that's where this collaborative work takes us. It's in the realm of storytelling and the realm of symbols and the realm of archetypal images. And I find it fascinating to watch people enter these discussions with each other, because you have a seemingly empty room and just a bunch of abstract images. And then all of a sudden people are in a room together talking about what this could possibly mean, yet again, interpreting these images. And it becomes a very communal, beautiful conversation that's outside of the bounds of, you know, I'm for everything good and against everything bad, or I'll meet you, you know, as Rumi says, in the field beyond good and bad, right? So it's a very genuine, authentic, beautiful human conversation that I think we lack often in the Newtonian world. And I think that this medium of film has now become my art. And it's, I think it goes very hand in hand. I think dreaming is a very visual art form. And I think it's the direct path for artists. And this language of interpretation.
Kelly, we were talking about nightmares before, and you were talking about kind of what you can be learned from this collection of dreams and how people are all reflecting world events and what's happening in our world through dreams. What exactly are nightmares? What's happening in your brain? What are they? What's the function of a nightmare?
Yeah, they're actually a few different types of nightmare phenomena that researchers usually and therapists will distinguish. There are people who have suffered a severe trauma will often have very repetitive graphic replayings of the traumatic event. And those are a very specific type of nightmare that definitely, benefit from treatment and professional attention. There are also nightmares that are very scary, involved narratives that are not necessarily trauma connected, but are reflecting dynamics in the growth of personality, the experiences in life. The age range that is most prone to nightmares are young children. I mean, children between the ages of 3 and 6 across the lifespan, they have the most nightmares. And one explanation for that is that they are at a time of life that is most vulnerable. Their actual experience is of having not a whole lot of agency or power. And so the world, even though we romanticize childhood, oh, it's fun and games, at an unconscious level, there's an awareness that this is really scary, and these are all the threats that might come at me. Children have more dreams of animals than do adults, so that's another large-scale pattern that suggests things happen early on with children and nightmarish images. Yeah. So,
Kelly, why do you think the study of dreaming is so important and relevant today? You mentioned that this has been something, you know, humans have been thinking about and looking into for hundreds and thousands of years.
Yeah, what I'd almost like just you know, replay what Elisa just said. I mean, and we've been working together for, I don't know, maybe 10 years now. And it's, for me, the kind of the premise of the dream mapping project is that artists don't know how much they know about dreams. Like artists who are embedded in their practices, but are discovering these amazing insights and this idea of dreaming as a space for deeply human conversations and interactions. And the people that Elise is bringing into this project are from all across the world, from all different artistic disciplines. It's an amazing sort of traveling circus of artists, dreamers, and it is sort of experimenting with this idea that dreaming is a way of dream sharing, is a way of connecting with other people at a very deep and human level.
Well, you can find links to the Sleep Dream Database and Dream Mapping Project on our website, wvxu.org, and I'd encourage everybody to check them out. I've been talking with dream researcher and creator of the Sleep Dream Database, Kelly Bulkley, and City University of New York Assistant Professor Elisa Minyukova. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.